Dr. George Dimitri, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Good morning, I'm Taylor Wilson, and this is 5 Things You Need to Know Thursday, the 23rd of March, 2023. Today, what the Fed's interest rate hike means for the economy, plus a closer look at Trump and his supporters as he tells them to prepare for his arrest. And a student opens fire at a Denver high school. The Federal Reserve raised its key short-term interest rate again yesterday. So what's that mean for the economy as a whole? USA Today personal finance and markets reporter Elizabeth Buchwald has us covered. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back on. So what happened with this latest rate hike?
Fed raised interest rates by 25 basis points despite the turmoil going on with banking, saying that the priority is still with inflation and that the banking sector is still strong.
What factors led to this rate increase?
A bunch of different things, but I think the most important, as I highlighted, is inflation still remains much higher than the Fed would like it to be, and a lot of different indicators like employment have all come in stronger than the Fed has expected, so that's sort of paved the way for them to say, okay, we can risk raising interest rates and potentially slowing down the economy a little bit more since things are still so strong.
And what did we learn from the Fed's quarterly economic projections that were also released?
A bunch of different things. So one thing, they released what's called a dot plot, and that is sort of visualization of where each voting member sees interest rates going. And so they gave their predictions for the end of 2023, and it looked like it was lower than what they had been projecting in December. So that was one thing. They also revised some projections for unemployment, for inflation. They see inflation going a little bit higher by the end of the year than they had anticipated in December. And I guess the big thing, too, is that they don't see inflation coming down to the Fed's 2% target until 2025.
Elizabeth, it's been obviously a chaotic week plus for banks. Do these Fed numbers ease concerns about more potential bank failures, or do they fan the flames?
Powell tried to stress during the press conference that the two may not be related. In a sense, he's trying to get it both ways, where he can fight inflation and maintain that banks are stable. On the other hand, we do know that the two that failed, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, they had their investments kind of in the wrong place. In particular, for Silicon Valley Bank, they were investing in treasuries, which were, you know, a poor choice during these Fed interest rate hikes. So they're aware that banks had been doing that, but there's also going to be more regulation. I think it is fair to say, though, that banks were anticipating this, so it's not coming as a surprise to them.
All right, Elizabeth Buchwald, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's been a busy week on social media for former President Donald Trump after he told his supporters he would be arrested this week. I spoke with USA Today national correspondent on extremism and emerging issues, Will Carlis, to find out the latest. Will, welcome back to 5 Things.
Thanks for having me.
So former President Donald Trump said he would be arrested this week. It still hasn't happened. What's the latest on that, Will? And is Trump still drumming up his supporters on social media surrounding this claim?
Well, to take the first of those questions, it's not just Trump saying that he's going to be arrested. There are also various outlets reporting, various unnamed sources within law enforcement that say that an indictment from the Manhattan district attorney is forthcoming. So that certainly does seem to be a thing that is supposed to happen sometime soon. When it happens, your guess is as good as mine as far as Trump drumming up support. He has been basically posting incessantly on Truth Social, which is the social media company he founded, and posting continuously on there, asking people to get out and protest, calling this an outrage, making all sorts of claims about this being a witch hunt and a political persecution. That doesn't seem to have worked. As I reported in a story on Monday, these calls for protest seem to have fallen on deaf ears. I haven't really seen anything more than a few dozen people showing up at protests around the country. So it's been very muted so far in response. But of course, he hasn't been arrested yet. So if and when he's arrested, that will probably lead to some sort of protest.
Will, you wrote about this conversation among some Trump supporters that there might be a kind of trap at play here. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, so I spent much of the weekend looking through pro-Trump forums, and also I cover extremism. So looking at the extremist forums, just trying to get an idea if some of these extremist groups are going to take to the streets in defense of Donald Trump. Of course, you know, not every Trump supporter is an extremist, but pretty much every right-wing extremist that I cover is a Trump supporter. He has immense support from that wing of the GOP. So I was watching them, and essentially, yeah, that was the main narrative. This is a trap. This is a federal trap. And if you get out and protest, you're going to get arrested. This is not a new narrative. This is a claim that's made pretty much every time there are public protests and people are arrested.
So shifting to this coming weekend, Trump is planning a rally in Waco, Texas on Saturday. Why is Waco so important to parts of the far right?
I'm glad you asked me the question like that, because I want to make it clear. It could be a complete coincidence. It could be not related to the siege 30 years ago that Trump chose Waco. But here's why some experts I talked to think that that was chosen very specifically to hold his next rally. Trump's narrative over the last couple of years, since he lost the election, has essentially been, I didn't lose the election. There is a shadowy sort of cabal running our government called the deep state that is out to get me and is out to get you and wants to arrest me because it's evil and I'm good, essentially, is what it boils down to. Now, of course, you know, that's not true. And the charges against Donald Trump have very legitimate grounds in reality. But it plays into this idea on the far right that there is this sort of all-seeing, all-knowing federal government that is out to get you and that will commit atrocities against you and wants to throw you in jail or take away your guns or whatever. And the most potent piece of history in this regard is the Waco siege, in which the federal government, in a botched raid against the Branch Davidians, a Christian cult essentially, just outside of Waco, 76 people ended up dying in a horrific fire there. Now, that's often cited as sort of one of the worst excesses of the federal government, and if you believe in conspiracy theories, the worst excesses and the worst tragedies of the deep state.
And could there be any other reasons that he's doing Waco this weekend, Will?
Absolutely, there are other reasons. I mean, look, Texas is obviously a red state still. It's also mine pointed out that if you want to hold a big rally in Texas, most of the cities in Texas are actually leaning Democrat, with a few exceptions, one of them being Waco. It just seems very convenient and very coincidental that he's holding it in Waco of all times, right as the government kind of hones in on him and seeks to bring these criminal charges against him.
Will Carlis covers extremism and emerging issues for USA Today. Thanks, Will.
Thank you.
A male student who was being patted down during a routine safety check shot two faculty members at a Denver high school yesterday. They were taken to the hospital, with one in serious but stable condition, while the other was in surgery in critical condition as of yesterday. Police initially said the suspected shooter, identified as a 17-year-old, was still at large, and the weapon was not found at the school. Officials later said last night that a body was found in the woods near his vehicle, but wouldn't say whether the body was identified as the suspect. Before the shooting, the student had a so-called safety plan with school staff and was regularly searched when entering the building. The media can't seem to look away from Hampton, South Carolina. The latest chapter comes this week. The South Carolina Law Enforcement Division is now investigating the death of 19-year-old Stephen Smith as a homicide. That's after reopening the case amid its investigation into the murders of Maggie and Paul Murdoch, family lawyers said yesterday. Smith was found dead on a rural road in July of 2015. His death was ruled a hit and run after an initial investigation, which his family has criticized. Next up, Smith's body will be exhumed for an independent autopsy. Supreme Court justices wrestled yesterday with whether a squeezy dog toy that mimics a bottle of Jack Daniel's whiskey violated the company's trademark, or whether it's protected as a parody under the First Amendment. Jack Daniel's argues that the toy, which carries the words Bad Spaniels on the label, could confuse customers about who made the product and could tarnish the company's reputation. Jokes aside, it's not clear which way the court might be leaning. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit sided with the toy maker, ruling that the product gets special protection from trademark claims because it's a parody. Thanks for listening to 5 Things. You can find us every morning on whatever your favorite podcast app is. I'm back tomorrow with more of 5 Things from USA Today.
Dr. George Dimitri, medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works, and then the expert clinicians that interact with patients and families every day. It's not easy to have input at a substantive level to new drugs that are safe and effective at treating cancer. So our whole mantra has always been to try to minimize risks to patients and yet try to maximize the opportunity of finding how effective a new treatment could be. And that means understanding cancer really, really deeply.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.